Matthew Crawford is a philosopher and mechanic. He's also the author of Shop Class as Soulcraft, an inquiry into the value of work. Crawford told Steve Paulson why manual work matters.
One thing that's interesting to me is how we could possibly think it isn't. Someone has to actually do things, unclog the toilets, wire our houses, fix our cars. And I think that kind of work has always been important, but it seems like in recent years we've had this idea that somehow we're going to be, I don't know, taking leave of material reality and kind of gliding around in a pure information economy. And I think that was probably part of why shop classes have been pretty widely dismantled in a lot of schools. So the book is in part an attempt to speak up for the honor of the manual trades and say that it can be a life that's worth choosing.
And you're right that in this information economy that we now live in, there are certain assumptions that go along with it. One is that knowledge is power, that you're supposed to get a college degree and that if you're going to have any professional success, and that blue-collar jobs are going the way of the dinosaur. Is that line of thinking just wrong?
Well, I think you definitely need to learn a lot in order to find good work and be successful. But we've had this idea of sort of knowledge work versus manual work as though they're two very different things. But that's a distinction that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, say you're trying to diagnose why a car doesn't idle properly. It's not a trivial problem. And I think more broadly that the kind of thinking that goes on in the trades can be genuinely impressive if we stop to notice it.
Can you spell that out a little bit? What kind of thinking does go into diagnosing a car problem?
Well, you know, often the factory service manual will present a very idealized image of diagnostic work where you check this, this, and this, and sort of a decision tree and sort of point you in the right direction. But often you'll find that you have to throw that out the window and think in a more kind of improvisational way because there are often sort of physical circumstances that aren't anticipated by the manual. So that kind of work, I think you always have to be adaptable.
Well, and you talk about the stock mental library that experienced mechanics have when they're trying to figure out something that's tricky, because when it's not obvious, I mean, you do have to. Well, it struck me as a little bit like a doctor trying to diagnose an illness that is elusive.
Yeah, I think that's right. Anytime you're fixing things that you didn't make yourself, then you never know it all the way down. You have to be very attentive to the signs by which, you know, it tells you what's going on with it. So that introduces a whole other element, sort of habits of paying attention that develop in the trades. And I think part of that is that when you're dealing with stuff that lets you know right away if you've gotten something wrong, it tends to focus the mind because you can actually get hurt physically or someone else can get hurt. So you may go in with one hypothesis and then discover that you're wrong and because, say, you know, the motorcycle won't start and there's no kind of BSing your way out of that. It kicks back in a way and you can't go too far along mistaking theory for reality before it lets you know.
So that's part of the attraction for you, that, I mean, you're dealing with real objects here. I mean, this is not just a theoretical discussion. You're not just sort of, I don't know, comparing your ideology next to another person's. I mean, you have an actual problem here that you're either going to fix or you're not going to fix.
Yeah, and I find that kind of soothing. You kind of know where you stand. So, you know, I've done other work that was a lot more kind of ambiguous. And, you know, working in an office, sometimes the chain of cause and effect can get kind of opaque and confusing, and responsibility gets sort of spread around. And as a result, I think that kind of workplace sometimes has a paranoid feel to it. You have to always be managing what other people think of you because, for example, if you have a problem with your boss, you can't say, hey, it's plumb, level, and square. Check it yourself. So I find the job site can be a friendlier place, in my experience, less worrying about sort of what other people think.
Are you also saying that there's something more real about doing this kind of work? I mean, when you're dealing with physical objects and you're actually making things or building things or repairing things, that somehow that's more elemental than a lot of other kinds of work?
Well, I can imagine all kinds of jobs that would take place in a cubicle that would be great jobs. I think probably more important than the question of whether you're working with your hands or working in an office is probably the question of whether the job requires using your own judgment or not. And a lot of white-collar jobs get kind of dumbed down. I've had such jobs, whereas working as a mechanic, and I've also worked as an electrician, those jobs can never be reduced to just following a set of procedures. And so if you're, you know, someone who wants to use your mind at work, I think the trades are worth taking a fresh look at.
I have to say this is a really different way than how most people look at the trades. I mean, you're really sort of trying to reclaim the intellectual component here. Why has that been forgotten when most people talk about manual work?
That's a very deep question, I think. It seems to have a prestige problem. I mean, when people think of the plumber, maybe they just think of the famous butt crack and, you know, don't stop to ask themselves why they are paying this guy $80 an hour. He must know something that I don't know. And I think it's easy to assume that if the work is dirty, it must be stupid. And I think that's tied to the fact we tend to privilege theoretical knowledge over practical knowledge, sort of knowing that something is the case as opposed to knowing how.
Well, you're also suggesting that there's almost a philosophy that underlies this kind of work that you've taken on. I mean, there's integrity to being a bike mechanic. I mean, as we've said, you either get it right or you don't. And maybe there's an ethics involved too, in terms of just caring for that bike that you're fixing.
Yeah. Just to be clear, these are motorcycles rather than bicycles.
Right.
No, I think that's right. I think actually the ethics of it is very much tied up with the cognitive challenges of it. When you're diagnosing stuff, you always have to be open to the possibility that you may be mistaken. Otherwise, you know, if you get too attached to your hypothesis, you just end up beating your head against the wall. So you're always, there's a kind of attentiveness that develops. And I imagine it's like what a doctor does, where you really have to read the symptoms and be mindful that your initial theory going in is wrong.
Well, you have some wonderful anecdotes in your book. And one is when you're fixing, I think it was some sort of a Honda. It was not clear what the problem was, but it was clear that this was going to take a lot more work than what your customer was really counting on. I mean, it was going to be a high bill. And the way you write about this is you say, well, there could have been kind of a relatively quick fix, but it wouldn't have gotten to the underlying problem. And at a certain point, your allegiance was to the motorcycle itself even more than the customer.
Yeah, and that can actually become a problem. I mean, I sometimes get a little obsessed with the bike and forget that the clock is ticking. But having to explain your labor bill to the customer, that tends to put a check on those obsessive tendencies because, you know, the customer has other concerns and he just wants the thing to run right. And maybe you don't need to go down this rabbit hole of replacing some oil seal that's only, you know, partly buggered. So
why do you do that then? I mean, if that's not really what the customer cares about ultimately.
Well, the point of that episode is trying not to do that. It's sort of the struggle against this tendency to get this tunnel vision where all I can see is, you know, some problem that I get fixated on. In the book, I relate that episode as an example of a kind of, I guess, circumspection that's required. You have to always look around and see what the sort of larger picture is. And so that's actually one of the major threads of the book is how going into business and doing this kind of work can be a kind of cure for self-absorption and a kind of narcissism, really, where you get fixated on something without thinking of how it affects other people.
But here you are also a guy with a PhD in philosophy. And I guess I wonder whether your philosophical training has any bearing on how you think about your job as a bike mechanic.
Yeah, sure. I actually don't see them as being sort of totally separate things. I guess philosophy is really just the art of thinking and a love of thinking. And that, I think, just about anything you do can be enriched by trying to be reflective about it and sort of self-critical about it. And, you know, I see people, most people don't have PhDs in philosophy, but that's something that I think most people do in their work life. I mean, work is a huge part of our life, and you can't really get through a working life without thinking about what you're doing and how you might do it better.
Matthew Crawford is the author of Shop Class as Soulcraft, an inquiry into the value of work. He spoke with Steve Paulson.